Yes, welcome to another episode of Sacred Cinema with me, your host Jimmy Bernasconi on 2XX FM on the 98.3 frequency. This week's topic, sex, desire, and videotape. Yes, you heard me right. Sex, desire, and videotape. If you're a sucker for Soderbergh, you may think I've made a mistake there. We will be talking about the film Sex, Lies, and Videotape in today's show. But I am specifically changing those three concepts. Yes, we're going to be talking about the interplay between sex, sexuality, that thing you know I'm talking about, the concept of desire, the things that we want, and this concept of videotape, video recording, technology, modern technology, the way that we record ourselves, human nature, the things that we love, the things that we hate, the things that we believe. Think about something like YouTube, the way that, think about this thing that we're doing right now, the idea of recording oneself and putting ourselves in this sort of eternal space, this digital world. How do all of those things, how do they intersect? What is the interplay between all of these things? Well, I've gotten onto this thought process or this rabbit hole, I suppose, because I fans of the show would know that I'm a big fan of that late 80s, early 90s period of it, particularly American cinema. You know, I kind of have this view that, you know, this is before streaming, or at least before the internet, before you could really pirate effectively on the internet or go on iTunes or whatever, or rent on YouTube or something like that. So people were still going to the movies, and it was probably the heyday of people going to the cinema as a social occasion and going to see, you know, the new Arnie film or the new Sylvester Stallone. I mean, this was the time when, I've talked about this before, but this was the time when, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger made all that money for Terminator. And if you think about it, you know, if you're a Soderbergh fan, this is the time when, you know, Julia Roberts started speaking, is paid the highest female actor of all time. You've got a lot of big budget movies coming out, at least at the end of this decade. You've got things like of Titanic, of course, and you know, James Cameron's heyday in a way as well. So this is a time where movies were a pretty big deal in America, and all three of the films we're going to be talking about today are all American films, and they all sort of are really interested in these ideas. I mean, there was a lot of sort of erotic thrillers around this time. We talked about that many, many months ago when we did our episode on Men with Gravity. I looked at a couple of Michael Douglas films, or at least there's plenty of Michael Douglas erotic thrillers out there, Basic Instinct, to name a few. And, you know, I'm also a massive 90s sitcom fan. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Seinfeld, massive fan of The Simpsons. And I was really curious watching both those shows on the weekend and noticing that the depiction of the women in particular in those shows is actually quite unique, at least historically speaking. You know, if you specifically want to talk about someone like Elaine's character and Lisa Simpson's character, they're both very intelligent people. They're both nerdy in a way, but they also kind of don't really, or their lives aren't in order necessarily, right? That they still have their everyday challenges. You know, they still have simple obstacles that they struggle to overcome. I mean, I was watching the specific Simpsons episode I was watching was the one where Lisa falls in love with Nelson Muntz, and she has to sort of reconcile her sense of, you know, how sensible she is and how intelligent she is with the fact that she's now got feelings for this oaf, essentially. And she's like, how does she overcome that? Can she change him? Is there any way that she can navigate that situation? And I was like, that's a really interesting character. It's a really interesting concept. Someone who has a great deal of mental intelligence, yet still has a lot of obstacles in just everyday life, having to coordinate things like relationships, like love, like romance. It's not something that the head can actually navigate necessarily. It is something that it is really the heart that is the brain of our sense of love. But I thought I'd explore that, and I started looking at films at this time, and a lot of them do explore these concepts of romance and the conflict that's involved. And how we're supposed to navigate all that sort of thing in the modern world. I don't think this episode is by all means just about women. I think it's about all people's experience with the modern world, specifically with the emergence of technology especially in the late 80s and through the 1990s, and how we are supposed to navigate all those sort of different things. And of course, this is territory that we have explored in the past. If you haven't listened to past episodes that we have done on cyborgs and silence and bodily autonomy, those are all going to come up in this week's show. So I would recommend going back and having a listen to those ones as well. But before we get stuck into the movies themselves, I just want to go a little bit deeper into this period in history, this late 80s, early 90s. As I mentioned, obviously, this is a time where we are coming to terms with, you know, the digital age that's about to emerge. But also, this is a time that's post-sexual liberation, I suppose, post the 60s, post the 1970s, and this the sexual revolution that was taking place there. And it's also after that kind of kind of Wall Street-y, Fatal Attraction 1980s, you know, shoulder pads, power suit moment where, you know, people were all obsessed with getting the green and Gordon Gekko type stuff. I guess this is the point where we're kind of becoming a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more familiar with not necessarily scrutinizing, but being somewhat critical or turning a critical eye to modern life, especially when it comes to, female sexuality. And, you know, we do want to live, you know, a liberated life. But we also want to have, some kind of noble career, some kind of noble career ambition. And this isn't necessarily a work-family balance exploration, but it's sort of more of a psychological or emotional one. You know, how do we sort of deal with these conflicting ambitions, especially when some people have certain ambitions and other people have very different kinds of ambitions? It's almost like this big melting pot of ambitions, but we still have out that animalistic, intuitive part of us that's rumbling, that's bubbling beneath all of that as well. But that's enough general chit-chat. Let's get to the actual films themselves. The first one we're going to talk about is Gus Van Sant's film from 1995, and that would be To Die For, the one starring Nicole Kidman. But then we're going to move on to David Cronenberg's 1996 film, Crash. And then we're going to finish off, of course, with Mr. Soderbergh's Sex, Lies, and Videotape. But let's kick it off now with Gus Van Sant's 1995 film, To Die For. So I thought we would start this conversation, at least in regards to this film, with a question. And I think we should ask ourselves this question, which is, let's just stop for a second. I want you to ask yourself, what do you desire the most in life, right? Well, what is something that you desire more than anything else? And maybe it's something you can't actually immediately think of. Maybe it's so deep and so clear in your bones internally that it's not even conscious to you. It's something that you do, dare I say, automatically. Something that you want more than anything else, that you would give up everything else to achieve it. And take a few seconds to think about what that thing might be. And once you've figured out what that is, I want you to think, do you think that everyone else has the same desire that you have? That thing that you're thinking of, if you were to turn to the person to your right or to your left or the closest person to you in the universe, do you think they would have the same desire as well? If not, what desire might they have? Or think about the person that's on the other side of the world to you right now. If you're in Canberra right now, you know, the other side of the world would be somewhere in what, Europe, Northern Europe, something like that. What do you think someone living in Reykjavik in Iceland desires more than anything? And I want you to be specific, not just, you know, love or friendship or companionship. I mean a specific goal. What's a specific thing and a specific ideal that you hold to be very valuable to you? What is that thing? And do you think that is uniform throughout human civilization and perhaps even throughout history? Well, I think this is the kind of question, or this is sort of what's being addressed in this film, at least on a broader, more conceptual level. The reason why I want to talk about this film is because I think it explores this concept of the desire spectrum. The idea that we all have very different desires, or at least if you took everyone in the world's deepest desires, they all look very, very different. Maybe you can link them all to some kind of mutual goal, some kind of mutual natural ethic that we all agree to. But what they specifically look like, and more importantly, the costs and the burdens and responsibilities that are entailed in achieving those goals are very different, right? So if you haven't seen this film, this one centers on Nicole Kidman's character, who's this very sort of conscientious, innocent kind of girl, kind of this girl next door, all-American, nice girl. And we've talked about that sort of archetype before many times on the show. We've talked about specifically thinking about, say, maybe something like Laura Dern's character in Blue Velvet. We also recently talked in the Scary Stalkers week. We talked about the Halloween and those films that are sort of about innocent or, you know, especially teenage women coming to terms with the tension between, you know, this sense of purity that society might impose on them, and this sort of this inner sort of reckless or more fun-loving personality that wants to come out. Now, that's kind of her at the beginning. And she has this this ambition, this very strong ambition, which is to become a TV star, to become a major TV personality. Now, she marries Matt Dillon's character. And he's this sort of just classic Italian-American guy who wants to run the family restaurant, have the house, have kids, you know, live that nice, humble life. And I also want to talk about Joaquin Phoenix's character in this film. When Nicole Kidman, she's trying to build up her portfolio as a reporter. She goes to this community station. She tries to launch this documentary about like teenagers. You know, it's that sort of almost like cliche expose or documentary that we've all seen about. You know, what are the youth of today thinking? And she goes after a couple of students, particularly vulnerable ones. And you've got Joaquin Phoenix's character. This is in the 90s as well. So he was kind of that. It was like that. Kind of that kind of weird, dazed kind of look, but you know, kind of a creepy guy, sort of. But you know, as a much more younger guy as we know him than today, you know, think his character in The Master, but much younger, and with, you know, hair over his ears and that sort of thing. And all he's obsessed with, being a teenage boy in high school, a bit of a loner, is just having sex. That's what he's obsessed with. That is his number one goal. So from the outset, we've got these three main players, and there's many other players in this film, with three burning desires that all look very different. You've got Nicole Kidman's character, who has this very strong careerist professional ambition. You've got Matt Dillon's character that's kind of got the traditional American dream desire. And then you've got Joaquin Phoenix, who has that very animalistic, very impulsive desire. So the way that the film plays out, or at least in my view, is that they're all trying to fulfill these very obvious desires, desires that are very obvious to them. And I suppose in the interplay between these different characters, we actually have, you know, competing desires. It's a phrase that's used very often. And that's nothing new, the idea of people having different goals and having to somehow compromise and conduct themselves in a way, or navigate this network of that we call society in a way that means everyone can get what they want, or, and hopefully not at the expense of someone else's desires. But I want to ask this question. Do any three of these characters, I mean, they're all very, very distinct desires that they have. Do any of them desire them more or less than each other? And it's something worth watching the movie to consider, because they're very different. They all have very different costs. I mean, if you think about it, you know, some of these desires, that they require just mere moments of preparation or of activity, right? Some of them take quite a few years, maybe even decades or so, to fulfill those desires, and then others take an entire lifetime, right? So is it one of those things where the cost that's required to achieve these goals is proportionate to how deeply the people desire them? Well, I want to propose an idea that all of these desires, you know, despite the fact that they are very different in terms of their nature, they're all held as deeply as one another. Nicole Kidman wants to be a TV reporter just as much as Matt Dillon wants to be a dad and run his family restaurant, just as much as young Joaquin Phoenix, as a 16-year-old loner in high school, wants to get laid, right? So I suppose one of the key takeaways from this film is that people are willing to die for all sorts of different things. Just because we aren't willing to die for something doesn't mean that someone else isn't willing to die for it. Or at least just because we don't want something that badly doesn't mean that someone else also doesn't want that very same thing very, very badly. So we have this very broad spectrum of things that we all want. We all want them very, very badly. So we have a choice as human beings, don't we? We can attend to those very impulsive short-term desires, or we can put in the hard yards and focus and concentrate on more long-term desires. And there's going to be all sorts of, you know, moral choices that we have to take into consideration when doing either one of those. So for the purposes of today's conversation, let's go hardcore into some of these more short-term desires we might have. And then let's look at some of these long-term desires and kind of break down what are maybe some of the advantages or disadvantages, or both of them. Or is there a superior way to nurture a desire? Is there a certain kind of desire that is superior to another? Or is there a way that we should approach our desires that is better than an alternative approach? But before we move on to this second film, I'd like to remind you are listening to 2XXFM on the 98.3 frequency. Stick around listening to 2XX if you are listening live. We've got plenty of more fantastic radio content coming your way. But if you're listening on our website, perhaps you're listening on the on-demand platform. While on our website, please feel free to subscribe to the station or sponsor the show. That would be very much appreciated. So moving on to this second film, we're now going to hone in on a film that explores those more impulsive kind of short-term desires and break down what are some of the implications of tending to those things or putting them on a higher echelon by putting them up on a pedestal, so to speak. And we're now going to talk about Crash. A 1996 film directed by David Cronenberg. And while we're talking about this one, I want you to ask yourself another different kind of question, which is when you have one of these more impulsive, animalistic, short-term desires, where does that come from? When you feel that, is it something that we turn our minds to and think about for a very long time? And if you do, what is that thought process? If you have an impulse, some kind of instinctive impulse, how do you react to it? Do you just let it take over you? What are the sort of strategies that we have in place when we feel something that is quite impulsive and perhaps even overwhelming? So getting back to the film itself, it basically centers on James Spader's character, who works in like TV in some capacity. I think he's like a TV show director, or it's like a news thing or something. Anyway, the start of the film begins with him standing behind a camera, and he's saying, well, that's something else happens actually at the beginning of the film, but when we first meet him, he works for a TV station. And basically, he gets himself into a car accident. And he falls into this subculture of people who get off to car crashes or engaging in sexual activity when they're in a car that's in a dangerous sort of situation, and that they sort of reenact these famous car crashes through history. They reenact the James Dean car crash, and then that sort of thing. And I suppose one way to think about this film in sort of a static way, or at least in a way that it sort of meditates or marinates in this alignment of sexuality or sexual desire and the car crash. So I suppose if you had a whiteboard and you were to brainstorm some of the words or concepts that are being lifted up in this film, I suppose maybe one of the first things would be, the idea of a sudden impulse or something being overwhelmingly intuitively or instinctively desirable. Something that that you accelerate towards, something that depending on who you are, it might be something that takes a long time, but generally there's a great deal of speed that comes into play at least at some point. There's definitely this sense of intensity and definitely almost this sense of impatience as well. There's a clear direction that we want to go in, and we want to go in it now. It's something that has to happen now. You're feeling it. It's got to happen. We've got to move in that one singular direction. But if you ask me, I think all of these concepts sort of build or they sort of galvanize and accumulate to get to this sort of central concept of automation. And that's definitely something we've talked about through the weeks on this show. The idea of, especially when we talked about the cyborgs episode, the idea of at what point do we stop being a human being, or at what point do we abandon our sense of humanity? When we think about the bodily autonomy episode we did many months ago, and we especially talked about that movie Invasion of the Body Snatchers, we talked about why do we actually want to have control of our bodies, or what does that even look like to have a control of your body? Why is that something that's beneficial for us? If you look at something like a vegetable or a car or something like that doesn't care about what happens to it. It doesn't have any sort of consciousness about it. Why are we so conscious of our bodies? And why do we want to be conscious of what's happening with our bodies? So if we're going to explore this idea of automation in this film, I mean, there's a reason why it's about car crashes, and we've got all this imagery of steam coming off of these hot motors and revving engines and that sort of thing. And look, if you've seen the recently the recent film Titane, is it Titane or Titane? I haven't heard an actual French person. I'm getting off topic here, but if you've seen the recent film Titane, that's definitely getting into this territory. And when I was reading up about Titane, a lot of people said this is a very, very Cronenbergian, this film. So the Titane was. So getting back to Crash, the film starts to explore, as Spader gets more involved with this subculture, we start to explore this question, or start to answer this question, is there a dark side to indulging this more impulsive, automatic part of us, that part of us that when the pedal's down, when that sexual pedal's down, we race forth towards some kind of sexual encounter? Is there a kind of dark side to that? And I suppose when you watch the film, I don't want to give too much away, but when you watch the film, you do begin to observe this kind of downward spiral of being a slave to impulse. And actually, this, when I was watching the film, it reminded me very strangely, very weird coincidence, but maybe not. I just watched a video on YouTube just a couple of days earlier about a guy that used to be addicted to heroin. And he talked about the idea of the only way to really enjoy heroin, and maybe you've tried it before. I've never tried it, so I can't actually speak to this myself. But what the guy was saying, when you try something like heroin, when you do something like heroin, you've kind of, the only way to properly enjoy it, the only way to properly really enjoy it is to take it to that point when you're almost about to die, right? And if we think about a sexual encounter, I suppose that does sort of translate in a way, it's that point where you build up to that point where you're about to reach the precipice, right? The only way to fully enjoy this thing is to sort of get to the edge, right? So this concept of getting to a point of finality, having to, engaging in something that's deeply, deeply pleasurable, all the while you are a mortal human being and that there is a final end that comes to you. And there was a really interesting moment in Crash where the characters are sitting down watching TV and they're watching like a documentary on salmon. And people would know salmon, I'm pretty sure this is true, I mean I'm almost certain this is true, that salmon are one of those animals where they do this massive migration, this big migration, swimming through the oceans to meet up with each other to reproduce. And then I think they die, right, after that. So that's also getting, this happens in nature as well, that there's this impulse to do a deeply, deeply pleasurable act that we build on and we want to, get to the next point over and over again and to this downward spiral, this point where we're actually pushing ourselves close to the point of death. So I suppose one of the takeaways from this film is that if we do engage that more impulsive side of us, that is overwhelming, that overwhelming animalistic instinct in us, we are really risking a lot, and perhaps the only way to fully achieve some way of this total pleasure, at least within this realm of impulse, is to take it to a point where we are risking it all, and perhaps we'll give everything up. Equivalent to racing a car like James Dean in Rebel Without a Cause to the cliff and having an inevitable crash. Right, so I mean, the film was very aptly named that, and also I should mention, if anyone hasn't seen the film, the ending of this film, I think, is, I remember I walked away from this film being like, that ending is so confusing, I don't know what's going on, but it's almost the perfect ending if you think about it. I can't talk about it in too much detail, but I have never seen a film I can't think of an ending that is so morally ambivalent yet neat and tidy and almost perfect in both a tragic, but also calming way. It's a very interesting salty, sweet, sweet and salty, sweet and sour mixture in the mouth when you're watching this film. Anyway, we've talked about that sort of that short-term sense of desire. What about the long-term sense of desire that we also have a choice to choose? And in talking about this and in answering this question, what does it look like to invest in a desire, a long-term desire? We're going to finish with our third and final film, which is Sex, Lies, and Videotape, directed by Steven Soderbergh. So if you haven't seen this one, it stars Andy McDowell. It's also got Peter Gallagher. He is her husband. And then you've also got James Spader in the mix as well. And then it's sort of a two guys, two girls type situation because we've also got Laura San Giacomo in there as well, who plays Andy McDowell's sister. But we're going to focus mostly on Andy McDowell's character and I guess Peter Gallagher's character as well. And Andy McDowell, tying back into what Nicole Kidman was all about in To Die For, Andy McDowell kind of plays Andy McDowell, or at least what she's like in Groundhog Day and that sort of thing. This sort of very sensible, very conscientious wife in this case, she's married to Peter Gallagher, who's that kind of rich Wall Street guy. And she's sort of not that interested in sex and being sort of a salacious and erotic and adventurous sexually. And separate to that, Peter Gallagher's character is off cheating on her. And he's actually cheating on her with her sister. So when I talk about the idea of there's sort of a two boys, two girls situation, it's almost like we've got two women on two ends of the sexual spectrum and two men on two ends of the sexual spectrum as well, because James Spader is in the mix as well, and he is Peter Gallagher's friend, and he's this sort of interesting quiet guy that's just come to town, and he has this weird obsession with videotaping women. And this is where we're going to really get into this whole videotaping technology area of this conversation now. So the first thing I want to say about when you tape someone, especially when you videotape a woman in sort of an erotic setting, the first thing I want to say is there's a sense of eternity with video, with recorded media. Time almost stands still. When we talk about eternity, we don't mean till the end of time. We talk about almost something that is timeless, something that isn't temporal, I suppose. So That's the first thing I wanted to jot down. But if you hear me, if you haven't seen the film, you hear me talk about the idea of this guy filming women and, you know, the sense of eternity, and he can just watch these videos whenever he wants. You're probably thinking, oh, that's kind of like kind of gross, right? That's like, these are like pornographic, is that the thing? Well, that's the thing. It isn't at all. What he actually does is he puts these women on camera, and then he just asks some questions, just repeatedly, a bit like that scene of 40-Year-Old Virgin, where he's like, be like David, what's his name, in the movie Jade, and then Steve Carell goes and asks Elizabeth Banks all those questions and wins her over that way. But that's kind of what he does. He just asks these women questions that they want to answer, questions about who they are and questions about their life. And it's not doing it in a way to sort of win them over. They actually become more aroused than he does in just opening up and sort of speaking about the deeper elements of their lives and their histories. Just very freely, and it almost is. It's almost like this moment of therapy for the women that he chooses, or for the women that he interviews. And they, as I mentioned before, they sort of get aroused, and inevitably in this film, Andie MacDowell finds herself becoming more and more familiar with James Spader's character. And again, I don't want to give away the ending of this film in case you haven't seen it. But I think it does sort of lift up this idea that the definition of love, or a one definition of love, could be that love is like it's an eternity of inquiry, right? True love is achieved when we don't view the person standing across the, sitting across the table from us as some that is static, that we understand, that there's always curiosity that is required in order to develop a relationship, because there's always going to be things about someone that we don't know, and things about them that they're anxious about, that they want to get out. And I guess it's kind of ironic that Peter Gallagher finds out about all this, finds out about what's happening between his wife and James Spader by actually sitting down and watching one of these videos, by taking the time, by being a little bit patient, and by observing one of these sort of emotion time capsules, one of these cassette tapes that has recorded how Andie MacDowell actually feels, that inner version of herself that she's never been able to, or that he's never invoked, that he's never requested from her. And I suppose in this way, this film is almost like it's a broad allegory, maybe for film or art generally, or just for observation more generally, that we can learn so much about a person just by sitting quietly, maybe not by rambling on for half an hour about the movies you like, but maybe sitting quietly, just looking into someone's eyes and seeing how enlivened or how excited they get just by talking about what's deep inside them, and not necessarily seeing it arouse them sexually, but seeing it bring them to life. And in a way, maybe that's how we record what they truly and most deeply desire. So that's it for Sacred Cinema this week. I have been your host, Jimmy Bernasconi, on 2XXFM on the 98.3 frequency. Thanks so much for listening to another episode. If you'd like to get in contact with the show, please reach out to us on Facebook, or you can find my personal Instagram. Just search Jimmy_Bernasconi. But you can find us on Facebook by searching Sacred Cinema with Jimmy Bernasconi. But until next time, stick around on 2XXX for more quality action. See you again very soon.